We are continuing now with Chapter 3. Ready? Fortunately, the bus depot downtown was close to the impressive old courthouse, and I walked there to meet with Barney. He was super friendly. He showed me around the offices, introduced me to some senior reporters, took me to a stately courtroom, told me that as a student reporter I would share an office with other student reporters and be expected to work on my shorthand skill to attain speeds of 180 to 200 words per minute. He said the salary as a student would be $250 per month, and when could I start? I said, right away. He nicely asked, do you have a place to stay? No. Any business clothing? No. Dress shoes? No. You will need to wear a suit and tie every day. How about you get this all arranged and start after the July long weekend? I was plenty excited about the whole thing, especially the monthly salary. I know in comparison to today's rates, $12 a day is less than the minimum wage for 1 hour's work at McDonald's. As a very young kid, I was given an allowance of a nickel a day, just enough to buy a popsicle after school before the ride home on the school bus. But 25 cents a week was more than a lot of my classmates got, which was nothing. As a teenager, my parents acknowledged my work contribution to the farming operation by giving me a few head of cattle of my own to raise and sell offspring, and by the time I graduated, I had a bankroll large enough to buy my first car, a low-mileage 1965 Ford. Gas was only 35 cents an imperial gallon, which for comparison purposes contains 4.5 liters and works out to 8 cents a liter. A pack of cigarettes cost about the same as a gallon of gas. Oh yeah, it was cool to smoke back then, and I slowly started at age 14. Room and board would be $90 a month, and Mom and Dad helped pay for a couple of inexpensive suits, a sports jacket, some dress pants, and shiny black shoes. I was late for my first day on the job because I was on the wrong side of the street when I caught the bus going in the opposite direction. By the time I fully realized it, I was the last person on the bus. The driver was about to return to the garage after completing his shift and asked me where I was headed, and he kindly dropped me off close to a correct bus stop and told me which buses to catch to get downtown. When I finally arrived at the courthouse, I was greeted with comforting faces, and they put me at ease by laughing at why I was late for my first day of my first job. I would need much more than a chapter to relate all of the good things that happened during my 9-month student reporting experience, but let me say that it was awesome. There were a lot of positive influences. However, if I had to pick one individual that had the biggest impact, I would have to say that it was Doug Ayers, the street-smart city boy student reporter who brought this sheltered and naive farm boy up to speed the quickest. He was only 2 years older than me, but had abounding knowledge and shared it freely. He also took it upon himself to teach me the difference between right and wrong, sometimes leaning more towards the wrong. As a result, there were times I was the brunt of harmless teasing and practical jokes, but I was not a wimp and took it all in stride and soon matched his wit and developed a lasting friendship with Doug that went beyond being office mates. Student reporters were mentored by working reporters, and we individually sat in on legal proceedings almost daily to write alongside qualified reporters. Not only was the entire court reporting staff and typing pool on a first-name basis regardless of age, but I learned how respectful and formal reporters were of the judiciary in the courtroom in public view, and surprised to see how friendly they were with the judges during adjournments in the back rooms. I also discerned that the rapport that one had with counsel seemed to have a bearing on how considerate they were of the reporters during proceedings. Clearly, respect had more to do with relationships than just using a Mr. or Mrs. before a surname. Throughout, I rarely missed going to the farm every weekend and helped as much as I could there. Dad was downsizing, but still reliant on me, and he knew that I could be trusted to do quality work. As a side note, while the jury-built brand wasn't formalized until my second daughter, Leslie, designed and affixed a label to a hoodie she had given me, I think this may be how the concept evolved. If you look up the terms jerry-build or jerry-rig, they're defined as slapping something together hastily. Jerry Bilt, spelled B-I-L-T, is a play on my name and that definition, and is known by my peers as meaning something done with care to the best of my ability. Even with good intentions, I know that it is often challenging for anyone to always do one's best because of time constraints, and I still remember Dad urging me to hurry up by saying, "It's good enough." In those instances, I likely acquiesced, but I have always disliked mediocrity. And over the years, I learned the meaning of the adage, why is there never enough time to do things right the first time, but always enough time to do them again?